27 minutes after the hour on a Tuesday, and that's time for Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist. He's a member of the board of Creation Moments, and he has boy, is he a busy guy. He's connected with multiple ministries, and he raises grapes and makes wine out in Garden Valley, Texas. And Don, happy Tuesday. It's good to have you back. We've talked about vaccines so much, and yet every week now, new stuff is coming to light. And I think it's because it's been around now for a couple of years, this mRNA vaccine, the one that messes with your DNA, and we're starting to see the results. Would that be correct?
Oh, well, and yes, we are starting to see more and more adverse events, from these vaccines. And the problem is that, of course, it was predicted that these things, the adverse events, would be happening. And, of course, now we got the new China variant coming our way.
XBB or
that's
XBB 1.1.
That's not unexpected either.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a conundrum, you know. So, I don't want to call it is science what they're doing. However, they have short-circuited all of the clinical research procedures that have been put into place over the years.
Is that because of a sense of urgency that they? I think that's why they waived some of the bureaucratic impediments to getting a vaccine out, but. For pharmaceuticals, did they drop safety protection just to rush this thing to market? And was it for money or was it to protect us?
It was for money. Mm. It was for money. And Fauci himself said at the World Economic Forum a couple of years back that we just need to change the way we do things. We need to get these things on the market as quickly as possible. And so he was probably one that was pushing for reducing the amount of clinical data and safety information required for these new vaccines, because he wanted to see this new technology, being tested. And not only did they kind of short-circuit the clinical trial program, they didn't even collect the data that they were supposed to be collecting.
Well, let me propose a new conspiracy theory for you and see if it gets some tread here. Let's say during the Trump administration, when COVID hit, Big Pharma saw an opportunity. And so they went to Trump and said, look, we can get this done for you in time to save your legacy and your reputation and save lots of lives if you just waive all those requirements from the FDA and the CDC and whoever else, the NIH. Do you suppose that they, what was the name that Trump gave, Operation what? Warp Speed.
Warp Speed.
Do you suppose that was a Big Pharma idea to begin with?
Well, it was a World Economic Forum idea to begin with, which the large pharmaceutical companies said, yeah, we're going to make billions and billions of dollars off of this. So, yeah, anytime we can short circuit, our clinical trials and save hundreds of millions of dollars in doing so and getting this out, in the population. We're going to be for it. And, of course, Fauci, being a part of the World Economic Forum, was very much in favor of it. So I think it was a case of President Trump being naive. And here we are with a lot of adverse events, continuing adverse events. The vaccines are now showing that people are more susceptible to getting COVID and the various variants of COVID than the non-vaccinated folks. Doesn't mean that the non-vaccinated folks can't get sick, but the vaccinated folks, because they have hypersensitized their immune system to a specific type of viral coat to the spike protein, they have less immunity, if you will, to variants that may be coming up. So their innate immunity is weakened by the fact that they've boosted their immune response to a specific type of protein. And this is, in my opinion, is a general problem of vaccines, you know, against viruses, because they do, by the very nature, even the older type vaccines, of course, they were studied, you know, for 15 years before a vaccine would get out into the market. Even the older vaccines, where instead of you know, producing a messenger RNA or the mRNA that then creates the protein in your own cells, they would just directly inject the like the coat, viral coat or something, in your system and build up you know, antibodies against that particular protein, which would then hopefully isolate the virus when and if you got the virus.
You mentioned something. I'm sorry, Don. You mentioned something that...
No, go ahead.
Was interesting that I've never heard before, that you said, you just said that the World Economic Forum or somebody within it approached Donald Trump with the idea of creating this vaccine. Now, I thought it was the other way around. I thought that Trump
no, I don't think so. I think in, you know, Fauci, if you recall, Fauci was in the upper circles at the time, at the initial, and why wouldn't he be? Because he was the head of infectious, you know, diseases at the NIH.
Sure.
So he would be in the upper echelon, and of course, his recommendation might weigh much more heavily than someone else. So I don't think anybody other than Fauci, you know, approached President Trump and say, hey, we can get this job done a lot quicker by using these new technologies. And of course, you know, Trump had no idea what the technology was. I'm sure maybe they explained it to him, but whether he completely understood what they were doing, you know, I don't know. But between them and the pharmaceutical companies and the leaders in the pharmaceutical companies, and even if, you know, he had meetings with the pharmaceutical companies or his vice president, which was Pence, who was kind of leading, was put in charge of leading the charge for finding ways to overcome this virus, COVID-19, you know, they, in my opinion, and it's only my opinion, is that they got snookered by these folks and went along with it and said, well, hey, you know, if we can get a vaccine or something, some therapies available, you know, within a year, then that'll be a feather in my cap. And of course, you know, President Trump is not opposed to having feathers in his cap. And so pride probably worked in there instead of getting sound recommendations from people that he could trust. Now, later on in the whole process, he did kind of, you know, fire Fauci from his inner circle and brought in more people that, you know, could think more rationally and not be biased. I mean, Fauci had a stake in one of the pharmaceutical companies, right, Moderna, in order to make the vaccines in the first place. So, you know, there was no unbiased opinion coming out of that.
Here's another factoid. There's another article out this morning that has revealed that the NIH, scientists, including Fauci at the NIH, have taken in over $1.4 billion in third-party royalties over the past 12 years. Which suggests that even before COVID, the machinery was in place to make money. Now, there's nothing wrong with making money, but it was under the table. Nobody knew about this, and it results in skewing the science in favor of the profitability. And so this has been going on for some time, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this is corrupt science. You know, you can't do unbiased science when somebody's, you know, holding a currency in front of your face and saying, hey, you know, if you do this and come out with these results, it's you know, we'll give you tons of money, and also you'll be part of the patent. Your name will be on the patent, and therefore you can get royalties if the product comes to market, and you're in a position to approve the product, or at least recommend approval. So the corruption is just unbelievable.
Well, the NIH doles out $32 billion. This is from an article that's just out this morning on Fox now. The NIH doles out $32 billion worth of grants to about 54,000 healthcare entities across the United States. So here's Dr. Fauci directing these funds out for research to Big Pharma, and now he's owning stock in one of them. Does that suggest a conflict of interest? And that's, I'm suggesting there is, but it's perfectly legal.
Well, yeah, under the current system that we have, and he since he's been in that position, or at least until this year when he retired, he's been in that position for, 30-plus years, and so has developed all of these kickbacks, if you will. So, they're getting 1.4 billion.
1.4 over 12
billion.
Years, yeah. And that's divided over 2,400 scientists. So that's what, something a million, a piece, something like that.
Yeah. So, it's the government, so the taxpayers then fund this type of research, which goes to the pharmaceutical companies, mm-hmm. which develops the drugs, and they get short-circuited and approval, for these drugs. And then they get kicked back, so out of the 32, you can think of it, 32 billion yielded the NIH and its staff, including Fauci, 1.4 billion. Mm-hmm. So it was that was added to their salaries. Now, these folks are not, they're paid pretty well to begin with. And, the rest of us in society would say, that is something fishy there, for sure. And so by, developing this system that they have of this corporation and paybacks in these various forms, it has, completely corrupted the system. Which means then that the research that comes out of it and the drug products that come out of this is highly suspect, especially with regard to safety. Now, they may have some efficacy, and initially, of course, the vaccine had some efficacy, maybe within the first 3 months. But as soon as the variants came along, which we knew that they were going to come along because so many people were being vaccinated, which pushed the variants, then, the vaccines started to wane. And now we're at a point where the vaccines don't seem to really have very much efficacy whatsoever, but we still have all of the adverse events, which are myocarditis and, of course, pericarditis, all the heart issues, the blood clotting, the female issues, infertility, and other type of issues that have come along with these types of vaccines. And with everybody, not everybody, but a good portion of the population being vaccinated, we're now seeing long-term effects.
And now comes a doctor based in Louisiana who's known for his research on COVID-19 and other health issues. His name is Dr. Joseph Freeman. He says the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines should be withdrawn from the market until...
And he's not alone.
Yeah.
He's not alone in that. Many, many doctors are saying that. Yeah. And, even Dr. Malone, who was involved with the initial mRNA research in vaccines, and has long since quit that research. He says the vaccine should be withdrawn, and as well as our doctor here in Texas and many, many others around the country and around the world, for that matter.
Yes,
and
around the world. We're not hearing, we're not getting a lot of that news from what's happening with COVID and vaccines from elsewhere, but it's out there if you dig for it.
Yes, it is out there. And, of course, the media and, you know, Facebook and all of that is not even allowing that information to be spread throughout, you know, throughout the global media, for example. And so it remains suppressed. And when you start, you know, saying that, you know, wow, all these people are not recommending the vaccines anymore, and probably never did from the very beginning because of the type of vaccine they were, you know, that information's not getting out.
I think the news is getting out. It's trickling out because more and more people are refusing to take the boosters afterwards.
The latest.
I couldn't think of the word there.
And the latest booster.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And this doctor, Dr. Fraley, says we need to have a randomized trial to test. Now, what is a randomized trial?
He didn't add the word placebo, but it would be a placebo-controlled randomized clinical trial. And what that means is that the physicians or health practitioners who are administering the drug, or in this case, the vaccine, wouldn't know whether they were administering the true vaccine or whether it was a placebo. And then they take detailed, copious notes on any adverse reaction that the patients have.
Okay, well, here's the clinker. Who oversees that kind of a trial? Is it the NIH, the CDC? Is it Moderna and Pfizer investigating their own product? Who is it? And if we can't trust the CDC and the NIH and the FDA, and we can't trust Big Pharma, who is there to do this?
Exactly, because it is the responsibility of the pharmaceutical companies, at least when I was doing clinical research, of proving, first of all, safety, and then, of course, proving efficacy that, hey, you have a patient benefit with your particular product that you're trying to approve. So it would fall on the pharmaceutical companies. The pharmaceutical companies would pay for it. And then they would, you know, publish their results, or at least to submit their results to the FDA if it's a new drug. But we're way beyond that. Those trials were never done, and so now who's going to do it? It would have to be funded by the government. But the government is corrupt in this area, as well as many other areas, but they're corrupt in this area, so you're not going to get any funding from the government to do this type of research, because they've already screwed things up. And so where does this money come from? You'd have to have private foundations and people come forward, like, you know, Elon Musk and the other multi-billionaires.
Some loose cannon, you know, out there.
We want to see what the real truth is. So let's design a clinical study. And, you know, a clinical study that would be, this would be multi-centered, you know, clinical trial, because you need multiple patients. It might be a worldwide type of clinical study. And you would have to enroll, for example, different physicians to be the primary physician at that particular site. And what we used to have is institutional review boards that would say, okay, here's the clinical protocol, here's what we're going to do, and here's all the information that we're going to be collecting. So you would have data patient forms and all of this other stuff, informed consents to inform the patient that here's what we're doing. And you know, then all of that would have to be approved. I mean, that's the reason why clinical trials used to take a long time, because of all of the, in quote, red tape.
And you were talking up to 15 years, 10, 15 years, something like that.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Don. Do you think it's possible that these clinical trials could be forced on the pharmaceutical companies through the legal process? Are there enough legal new? I mean, I know that there are a number of cases being brought, and mostly they're being brought against organizations that required people to get the vaccine. And then,
yes.
So they aren't protected by, it doesn't seem like they would be protected by the bargain that they made with the Trump administration.
That they can't, that he can't be sued for adverse conditions.
Right. Yeah, they can't be sued for adverse conditions. They could be sued for requiring people, in most cases their employees, from getting the vaccine in the first place. Now, I would think that those could be sued. Is it possible maybe that we can get one step closer to the pharmaceuticals where they could be sued? They would be responsible and they would be required to do the clinical trials. I'm imagining.
Well, that's going to require. That's you've heard recently that President Biden is continuing the pandemic emergency,
mm-hmm, sure,
which means that how these vaccines are being used under emergency use authorization, they have no responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody gets injured from an emergency use drug. And so all of the standard type of things that you would do in clinical research kind of get thrown out the window, and they're saying, okay, we need this right away. And so, but we don't need it right away anymore. I mean, there's no pandemic. No. I mean, yes, no. We've got variants that keep popping up, and yes, people are going to be sick, but it's not going to be as severe as the original alpha strain. And so the government is involved in all of this. And as long as the government says there's still a pandemic and we need these things on emergency use basis, no one who should be held responsible will.
What would be the role of the American Medical Association in all this? Who are they, and do they have any power to do anything? The AMA.
The AMA. They're an association of. It's like any. They're a professional association, and so yeah, they have lobbies. They have lobbyists certainly in Washington that helps like any. Organization.
Well, I'm just thinking, like, we're hearing from all these physicians who say there are problems and there are adverse events and that's all coming to light and we need to reconsider what we're doing. And the government is all for doing what we've been doing, as are Big Pharma. So maybe it's the doctors as lobbyists who have to take charge of their profession and get this done. It has to come from the medical industry itself.
Well, and the AMA is not doing anything, they're another, big organization that have deep pockets from the point of view that, they're involved with the government. So there are other associations, and early on in this whole process, there were other associations and people doctors and medical professionals have joined together and saying, hey, wait a minute, let's stop. Let's not use these vaccines.
There was a letter signed by thousands of doctors early on in this whole process, and I've forgotten the name of their group. But they
formed Barrington Declaration. And so, yes, there are those, those folks. But unless you've got deep pockets, things probably aren't going to change until the cage is rattled enough that finally the mainstream media can't ignore it anymore. And, the information gets out to the general public, and then everybody says, hey, I'm not taking this vaccine. And then, that will stop. But it's too late. I mean, a good percentage of the population has taken the vaccine. And one shot would have been you know, enough. But you got, you know, you had two rounds of the first initial shot, and then we got booster after booster after booster. And every time you take a booster, you are priming your immune system specifically for that particular variant, if you will. And
well, here's one last question then. Does the effect of the vaccine ever wear off? In other words, if you had a shot or shots or boosters, can you wait it out and it all goes away? Or do we need to develop an anti-vaccine vaccine?
Yes. Well, that's a good question. And the answer to the question is we don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, the initial was, the vaccine's going to last a year. Mm-hmm. And then they said, well, okay, it looks like maybe we need to do something every 6 months. And, maybe every 3 months. And so, you know, of course, they're measuring antibody titers, that is the concentration of specific antibodies in your blood. And that, you know, that decreases rapidly anyway. When you get an infection, you'll have a large increase in antibodies specific to the infection that you've got. But after the infection is over, those initial antibodies, disappear from your system. And then you have hopefully built up some memory.
Is that also true with the mRNA vaccine? Because that's a different kind of animal.
Well, here's the problem with the mRNA vaccines is that the messenger RNA gets incorporated, apparently. Now we know gets incorporated into your DNA. And so the possibility of it never going away is probably high.
Hmm.
And so for the rest of your life, you are producing perhaps, this is the problem. We don't have the data to say one way or the other, but theoretically, if it's getting into your DNA, not only are you going to have it for the rest of your life, and you may be producing spike protein in your body for the rest of your life, which is going to cause brain fog and all of these, blood clots and inflammation of the heart and all of this stuff, inflammation of the lungs and all the things that we've seen, through the adverse events of their vaccine, but you're going to have it for the rest of your life. And then the scarier part is that you could pass it on to your children.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
So, the amount of research that needs to be... Yeah, the amount of research that needs to be done on these products is kind of never ending, and so probably that's why they didn't even start, and they just said, "Well, we'll just have the world population as our guinea pigs, if you will, and we'll see what happens, and we'll suppress the adverse events and put in the government that will just allow these things to be put through, because if this technology is allowed to continue, it won't stop here. It will be morphed into anything we want to do to manipulate your genome. We're going to do
well. I've got just a little bit of good news here, because I happen to know for a fact that my brain fog predates COVID.
Ah, there you go.
You had it before.
That's true for a number of us.
Yeah.
By the way, I put a link in the chat window to the basic article we've been talking today about today. It's from the Epoch Times, and it's about the doctor who is calling for withdrawal of both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, and you'll be interested to read that article. I want to mention creationmoments.com. That's the mention that didn't get to that mention, but Dr. Don is a member of the board of Creation Moments, and their website has a wealth of information, scientific information, that has to do with biblical creation. You'll find it encouraging and informative, and it kind of equips you. All that information kind of equips you to deal with the subject in your conversations with other folks. You might pay him a visit. It's creationmoments, plural, it's all one word, .com. And Dr. Don, thanks so much. Appreciate having you here today, and we learned something, and you scared us, okay?
Wow.
We can live with that.
I didn't mean to do that.
Well, that's all right. That's all right. Well, you also encouraged us, and that's a good thing. We will look forward to next week. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thanks much, Don.
Very good.
Bye-bye.
Yes.